Good morning and welcome to the roundtable panel. I think I say that a little too exuberantly for those of you with headphones? Well, I apologize.
Taking the advice of our listeners and getting closer to the microphone. Oh, there goes those eardrums.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel this morning. Joining us this morning for the panel, and just remember, you can join us too. All you have to do is write us a letter or go on our various social media places, Facebook, Twitter, you know, and it's roundtable at WAMC.org. And let me introduce the panel to you. Ray Graff is here. Good morning, Raymond.
Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you here as always. Yeah. Investigative reporter and University at Albany journalism professor Rosemary Armeo joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Mike Spain is back. He is the Times Union Associate Editor. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Great to have you here. And live from the Northway, we have...
traffic reports. Good. Oh, this is good.
We're going to start traffic reports. Live from the Northway, we have Dr. Alan Chartok on the line with us. So here was the deal. Alan has to be in Plattsburgh today, so he's traveling north. And because it was the day after the primary, I said, well, do you think you could join us for a few minutes while you're on your way up, and if that would be okay? And so Alan said he could, you know.
Did you ask him to come on to eat crow?
No.
Oh.
I was wondering, you can put off your nap for like 20 minutes, right, Alan?
So, Joe, here's the deal. I'm down to three dots on the Verizon. Three dots, dot, dot, dot. And if they go down more. So when I fade away like General MacArthur, remember him?
Yeah.
Just fade away, then you'll know I'm not here anymore.
Well, they have those Frankenpines now. You should be fine.
old political scientists don't die. They just fade away. So this is really quite something. I think we're all going to be talking about this morning. There are a number of things that are really fascinating.
All right, so let's start with the it is fascinating. So let's start with the fascinating stuff. New York yesterday, of course, had its primary, and we will we obviously want to talk about that. The fascinating aspect, I think a lot. We knew Donald Trump was going to win. I think the polls told us that he was going to be a huge win, and it certainly was. As for the Democratic side, it was supposed to be very close.
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
The polls made it very clear that it was going to be a big win. There was hope at the end and a lot of talk, unsupported by any kind of evidence, that Bernie was going to make it close. It wasn't close.
Okay. You didn't let me finish my sentence.
Oh, boy.
Okay. I said I wasn't going to jump in today either, but...
Okay. The point that I wanted to make was that at 9 o'clock yesterday, when the polls came out at 9:01, CNN immediately said that Donald Trump was the projected winner of New York by a huge margin, and then weirdly changed the color of the Empire State Building. I don't know why. Okay, then. Did you all see that?
Did CNN change the color?
Yes, they apparently were the ones in charge of that.
Really?
Which I didn't understand how that worked, but it worked. Anyway, and then they said that the Democratic race was too close to call, and because of exit polls, was within 3%
of the
point.
And Fox said the same thing, so it's not, you know, CNN said 4, and I think Fox said 4.
It's the problem with the exit poll.
Okay, so, Alan, while you are still with us and you still have three lines, what do you make of that situation?
Well, the pollsters, we learn one more time, don't always get it right, one way or the other. I mean, Bernie's chances here were, if he could get the kids out, if they could vote, there could have been the chance of an upset. My bet is that they did not. I've been hearing all kinds of anecdotal stories about kids who showed up to say, I want to vote in the primary, and they say, are you registered? I say, what's that? So that didn't happen. The upstate areas, including ours, seem to be pro-Bernie, right?
Absolutely.
Am I getting that correct?
You're correct. If he were running for president in the capital region, he'd be elected.
58%
right.
to 44% in search.
Look at Ithaca. Certainly, Ithaca is wildly for Bernie also, as I expected. So what you have now is Bernie doing not as well as he had hoped. But what was most interesting is in the news we just heard, his campaign manager saying, he'll be speaking about his plans soon. That sounds ominously like he's going to get out, despite the fact that the New York Times told him in an editorial yesterday not to get out, no matter what happens.
The Washington Post today has, in their main article about the primary, said Hillary wins, but at a cost, because we always have to put the but on. And it's an interesting but. It's that she has been badly, badly damaged by this extended bruising battle with Bernie Sanders, especially as it's turned personal and looked at her her money and her influence. And so maybe it would be good if there were kind of a coalescence in the Democratic Party now, because Trump is a huge person to have to
Can I disagree with that premise?
Oh, it's not my premise.
I don't.
So you
know, right.
That.
The Post. But I don't believe that this is in any way bad for her, because everything that Bernie has said in the last few weeks will be said times 12 in the general. And you're going to need to be battle-tested in that regard.
That's a good point. Bernie, many analyses have given Bernie a lot of credit for pulling Hillary up and making her defensive and getting her battle armor on, good metaphor. And this experience may prepare her for the onslaught of ads that will go against her when she's in the main election.
Here's the countering view, however. When Bernie Sanders says it, he has high favorables, he is beloved in many places, and it has true impact. If Donald Trump were saying some of the same things, oh, she's getting her money from Wall Street, blah, 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 it would be, oh, he's odious and hates women and he's awful and we don't care what he thinks. So Bernie has hurt her with this negative stuff far more than Trump or Cruz might.
There were many fascinating things to take out of the results from yesterday, but one to me is that if you look at the map of New York State of the counties and the districts, it is all red, which is all Donald Trump, except for one place, Manhattan. And John Kasich won Manhattan.
In
the Republican primary. And that is, I mean, Alan, isn't that somewhat significant?
Well, I was born, bred, and returned quite frequently to the west side of Manhattan. I'm not at all surprised by that. This is very west side. It's very New York, which is limousine liberal, people who make money on the street, people who want to keep their money often, and who are centrists. These are the Republicans now. They're centrists. They're not interested in Donald Trump because, you know, even though we gave them the Wallman rink, which is now the Trump ice skating rink, and the merry-go-round, the carousel is also the Trump carousel. But the fact is, they wanted a more moderate-type Rockefeller Republican, and Kasich is that guy.
It is, but it's fascinating to me that it was only Manhattan. It didn't follow through to any of the other boroughs of New York, and nor did it manifest itself in anywhere else in the state in a win. We should also note that in Manhattan it was close. It was not a huge decisive victory for John Kasich. He was able to manage three delegates out of the 95, I believe. Right.
That's right. That's right.
And so meanwhile, go over to the Democratic side. Hillary won all of New York City, all of the surrounding counties of New York City, as well as Syracuse, Rochester, and Buffalo.
And Bernie Sanders, as we said earlier, did tremendously in the Capital Region. Even in Elise Stefanik's Republican congressional district, he was pulling in 63% of the vote.
Yeah, in my home county of Washington County, 64% to 35%. I mean, of course, but it's also a border. I think that's important,
close
too.
Close to Vermont.
It's a border state to Vermont. Yeah. I mean, we also know this. We know this
man
very
well. Don't you guys think that the fact that Zephyr Teachout did so well in those very counties against the establishment candidate Cuomo, with the exception of Buffalo, she really did remarkable stuff. But there's a certain kind of, you know, we're not happy upstate about what's going on, and we're going to vote that way.
Yeah, you look at this map. You're absolutely right. You look at this map, and you look at the map from the primary, the New York primary for governor, and it is very similar in where Hillary had the votes.
What's going to be fascinating now is how this all plays out, I think, with with the voters. I mean, do you think New York State could possibly vote against against Hillary? Probably not. I don't see that happening. And I really am fascinated by what's going to happen with Trump. If they take it away from Trump, that could be the dissolution of the modern Republican Party, don't you think?
I don't think it's going to happen. Of course, I never have. I think he could get the delegates, and if he doesn't, he's now assembling a team, and he has a lot of power going into that convention. I can't see it happening.
Somebody mentioned the 1924 Republican convention yesterday, one of the talking heads. I think there were 100-plus revotes and votes at the convention.
Going to be a long week in Cleveland.
Well, I don't see how you could do 100 votes. But that's...
Well, what would you do if you were a Republican establishment type? You know, one of these guys. What would you do? Would you say, okay, screw all those people who voted for Trump. We're doing what we want. I mean, wouldn't there be repercussions?
Well, and Ray was talking about the talking heads and the coverage I was watching last night. People were saying, well, because John King and his magic board was doing all of the numbers and the possibilities and, you know, where and had him, you know, in realistically maybe 10, 15 delegates away and say, well, could you deny him that for 15 delegates, especially when you see polls that they have taken, exit polls from yesterday, of do you believe that somebody else should come in? And I think 70% said no. No, the person who has the most votes should be the person who is the candidate. And Wolf Wolitzer asked the question, well, isn't that, or I guess Anderson Cooper, isn't that, you know, indicative of what they will do then? Mm-hmm. And I believe it was David Axelrod who said, yeah, but there's also 70% of the people that believe that Merrick Garland should be...
Well, that's a good point. That's
you know,
point.
And they're just going to do what they want to do anyway. So I don't know.
I think that the Republican establishment, needs to resign itself to another 4 years of Democratic rule, unless Hillary screws it up again, which she's perfectly capable of doing. She's remarkably injurious to her own cause.
It'll be interesting to see how the Democrats, you know, if Bernie Sanders does suspend his campaign, maybe he'll wait a week until there's a few more primaries in Pennsylvania and Delaware and Maryland and make a decision after that. But if he does suspend his campaign, there needs to be sort of a cooling off period. How will they coalesce and come together and, you know, present their unified opposition to the Trump campaign? That will be very interesting.
Well, nobody thought that it could happen after the bruising campaign in 2008 between Hillary Clinton and Obama, and they did it very quickly and very effectively.
But the Republican campaign was also bruising, and Mitt Romney was, I think, ready to fold by the time the general election rolled around as well.
I guess so, but I think
it could go either way.
I think basically, if you look at the players involved, and one of those players being the consistent of being Hillary Clinton, it seems as though, I mean, obviously she has a lot at stake, but I think Bernie does too, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Alan, I mean, you posed the question earlier, but don't you think? I mean, if he is indeed taking a day to look at things or decide how he's going to stay, and he has said time and time again he was going to stay in this to California, but at what point do you say, okay, I want to help the cause though?
Yeah, no, I think that is the classic question. This guy really, I know him and I know what he wanted. He wanted to be president of the United States. On the other hand, he said from the very beginning, you know, that basically he could not see the Republicans taking this presidency, Supreme Court, and everything else. Now he could be a tremendous utility to go out for the Democrats and to say to people, do you really get to, because was it Rosemary or somebody said yesterday that in a recent poll, 30% of the Bernieites said they wouldn't vote for Hillary?
Yes,
well,
30%.
That is a place where he could be of tremendous help to go out now and say to everybody, you really have to do this. You can't afford to let them have Citizens United times 25 based on who they could put on the court. And he could really make a difference. We'll see whether he can do that.
Absolutely right. And they've already, Bernie and his wife Jane, have already given interviews in which they've hinted and said it. Maybe not as strongly as they will or would if he dropped out. But I think there's every sign he will do that.
There is a Alan, I just every once in a while you go in and out, so I want to get this in before
right,
the break.
Before
and
we go out altogether.
And that is the question of the voting problems in New York City. There are going to be many who look at that and say, you know, this is a classic example of voter suppression. I'm curious as to your thoughts on that and what you do about it, and how does ultimately something like that happen?
Well, first of all, Joe, you have to investigate it. You have to investigate it. You have to make sure that it happened. And I know that the city, that the city controller, Stringer, has already announced an investigation that he was going to do. But my question is, how do you know who to disqualify, right? I mean, you know, New York went solidly with the exception you posed of some Manhattan for example, Hillary. Why would you?
Oh, yeah.
You know, how would you know who to discriminate against? I don't get that one.
Well, you just take off the people who haven't voted for multiple years in a row. That's happening.
That's one way you could do it. You're right about that, Rosemary.
There's a rationale for that. I'm really torn on this issue. I think there is a real point to be made that we make it way, way too hard to vote in New York overall and probably in the city. But why should we keep people on the polls who don't vote? Is that such an unreasonable rule?
We're going to have a rule. I'm sorry, you didn't vote enough times. No longer have rights as a citizen.
I mean, if you're registered, you're registered.
Well, that's the way it is in my state of Massachusetts. I got to tell you, it's very easy to vote there. It's very easy to maintain an unenrolled status. And then what you do is you go in and you can get a ballot in either way. I know Rosemary and I don't always agree on that. But most people do the right thing. They vote in their own primary.
Yeah. I'm not really arguing this. I'm not sure where I stand on it. Were people actually denied a vote, or were they told to fill out an affidavit, which is, you know, we'll take your vote up later and put you back on the rolls?
And they only count them if there's a close race.
Yeah.
They won't get counted this time.
But, I mean, the federal judge to whom this problem was presented said, no, I'm not going to change anything. So I understand. I think there's probably an argument for this, and I want to hear what that is.
Alan, you know, David Gustina told me a great story this morning.
Alan, we're gonna take a break, but if you want
okay.
to...
No. We have to go.
Okay.
So we'll be down to those things. Thank you for permitting me to join you guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Travel safe. We'll talk tomorrow. All right.
Okay.
We will be back with the rest of the group, Ray and Rosemary and Mike, and your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Wednesday morning, the day after the New York primary. Very nice to have you with us. Ray Graff,
that's me.
Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain making up the group this morning. We do have letters. Let's get to some of those and see what people have to say about all of this. I want to know why pundits, says Christine, I want to know why pundits are saying Hillary has to start winning over Sanders supporters. He is the one with the divisive attacks on her. He needs to step up and begin changing his rhetoric if he is truly a Democrat. Remember, he is a recent Democrat.
She has to be gracious in victory. He has an enormous loyalty in the party, and she needs to win over his followers.
Depending on things, did they come out
on primary day?
Many did not. He might have won had there been more attention to actual voting as opposed to going to fun rallies by many of his supporters. I got letters from people saying, Rosemary, why don't you count? You're so interested in the voice of the people. Don't people at rallies count? And the answer is no, only votes do.
Right. Lisa writes and says, thank you to all voters who came out to help Bernie win the majority of counties in New York State. He received 90% of the vote in Ulster County, where I live. If you or anyone was unable to vote yesterday, call the Voter Protection Hotline. And that is a point which we were talking about, the voter suppression. Also, we got this note from Judy, who says, my son worked at the polls in Lower Manhattan, and a senior citizen voter came to vote as a Democrat to find that her status was changed to blank. She said she hadn't changed anything. She was told to go to 200 Varick Street to see a judge. She went, and he looked at the rolls and determined the signature changing her status was a forgery and gave her a court order to bring to the polls, and she was able to vote.
Huh.
How many more? Question mark. Maybe they didn't vote in the primary anyway? Question mark.
Interesting.
Also, John makes this point. Will the majority of Bernie supporters refuse to vote for Hillary, or will they be adults and use the momentum from Bernie's run to start a long-lasting political movement that can cause real change, change at the local level, change in state governments?
That'd be great. That would be great. And I do think that the whole Bernie and Trump, for that matter, campaign will lead to opening of rules maybe in the parties and voting rules. And I think that's a really healthy debate. And change is needed.
David says Bernie will work to unite the party in this election and will likely support new, young, energetic progressives in the Democratic Party in the future. He has supported progressives in Vermont. Also, James writes, I don't think the GOP will commit suicide and not deny Trump the nomination. And I think Paul Ryan knows he would be perpetually loathed if he tries to usurp Trump. Yeah. Also, how much do you think New York City Democratic machine politics played in Clinton's win?
Or Buffalo.
Or Rochester.
Yeah.
You got to understand, though, she was the U.S. Senator here for 8 years, and she was extremely popular. And she she has a lot of favors around the state. A lot of politicians supported her. It's not a shock that she would win so well in New York.
There was a scene yesterday after her victory speech, and someone on CNN said, if you look at that stage right now, every major political leader in New York State is on that stage, from the governor to congressional representatives to senators. Everyone was on that stage. So to your point, Mike, I mean, as far as the leadership of it, is that what we call the establishment? I guess so. But of all of the Democratic leaders in the state backed her. So I guess that, I mean, obviously that's going to play out. Oh, right?
Only in 2016, where organizations, political organizations, are denigrated as the establishment, is that a bad thing? It's a remarkable piece of organization and hard work. And as you say, years of working for New Yorkers. I agree. The polls pegged it from the beginning, and she actually delivered. She got the 15 or whatever percent.
Eve writes and says, why do you reflexively believe that all Bernie voters are liberals? A lot of what Bernie says is similar to what Trump says. David says,
why would you think that reflexively think that Trump is a conservative is a better question.
Aha. Uh-huh. Good answer.
Well, I see that Ted Cruz is changing his tune a little bit. He's kind of aligning himself with Bernie Sanders. In his speech last night, in Pennsylvania yesterday, he was saying, I'm a lot like Bernie Sanders in that I'm an outsider. Now, we have different approaches to resolve the issues, but we're a lot the same. So he's really kind of trying to portray himself that way.
They're a lot the same. They're U.S. senators. They are in the middle of the political establishment, both of them. It's just crazy that we have this desire as voters for—and Obama was part of this, too. We want outsiders, people who are out of the beltway, who don't know how things are done.
Right,
so
but
put
don't
in
you
the
think,
amateurs.
But don't you think now that we are almost at a tipping point, if not right now, that people have had enough— of the status quo. Isn't that what we're seeing with the Bernie and Trump, successful or not?
I think that's a pretty obvious conclusion. Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Yeah, people are tired of the way things are and they want new options.
David writes with this historical reality check, the 1924 Democratic, not Republican convention was the one with over 100 ballots before John W. Davis was nominated.
And, yeah,
how'd that work out?
Didn't work out too well. That's
President
right.
President Davis.
Point. Yes.
Great administration.
Flip says, when do we start talking about third-party candidates and their effect on the general election? Thoughts on Bernie supporters moving to Jill Stein?
Who?
That's right. Who?
Oh, here come the letters, Rosemary.
Sorry, I'm a veteran of 1968. Do not believe in third parties. You have to do a lot more organizing and work before you're in an election year before a third party is going to have any.
So you were not a Gus Hall supporter?
No, sir.
Is it a rational argument to say that the reason for the kind of brushing it aside by this panel would be that if you look at somebody like Bernie Sanders, who is playing in a party system and is doing everything right, has all of the money, and still may not make it. Right, and still may not make it.
Right.
Then what would that mean for a third party candidate who would have so many more obstacles to?
I mean,
you look at
Ross Perot, who had actual money. I mean, he was like Trump; he could finance himself. Could not do it. I just think it takes you're fighting against history and tradition and political organization. And to just vote for a third party is like saying, okay, well, I'm not going to participate in the real election.
It becomes a protest.
Yeah, write in a candidate. Write in mom's name.
Bill writes, a little lengthy, but we'll get to as much of this as we can. Full disclosure, I'm a Bernie supporter. I volunteered for him. I'm 67, and I'm appalled by Bernie supporters who say they won't vote for Hillary. I certainly will. I will vote for Hillary while holding my nose, however. I'm also appalled by White House dynasties, and Bernie shed light on how she is compromised by big money and allegiance to entrenched interests. However, she is a brilliant person and fully qualified to be president of the United States. The New York Times and others reported results by county, but delegates are awarded by congressional district. Why such shoddy reporting? How did the suppression of 125,000 to 126,000 voters in districts with probably lots of younger voters, i.e. Bernie, affect the results by congressional district? I'm never a conspiracy theorist, but ...
Well, the Times Union has a chart today of the 27 congressional districts and how each of them did, both the Republicans and the Democrats, and you can see the same picture.
No shoddy reporting there, we should
know. No way.
We got this note who says, as I went to vote, an eager young man came to the table. It's my first vote. I'm an independent. He was told he couldn't vote because he had to be a registered Democrat or Republican. I don't know, he said. The disappointment on his face was heartbreaking.
These rules have been in effect since 1974, by the way, the ones that required you to sign up last October 9th in your political party if you wanted to participate in the primary.
I think anyone who I don't have children, but I think anybody with children would certainly understand this of some frustration. But I walked into my class last night, looked at the face of students who 98% of wanted to vote for Bernie Sanders. I said, how many of you actually have voted for Bernie Sanders? One hand went up.
Yeah.
And I said, why haven't the rest of you voted? And they looked at me and they said, well, it's really hard and I got to go and I'm
When you're a student and you're away from home, there are more hoops.
No, but they're not even registered. But my point is that there is a point where it is on. It's on you, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you have to register.
But the system, I mean, the way it's
you're
set
right.
up now,
absolutely.
You could do this online, and then you would see student involvement
absolutely.
Skyrocket.
Right.
And
absolutely.
I don't see any reason against that.
It's just like the media. You have to hit people where they're consuming it. And when you have to hit people when you want to register to vote, you got to make it the way that they do everything else.
I guess my point being that it's hard to say that it's a conspiracy theory when, as you say, these rules have been on the books for a very, very long time, and it's affected people through many elections.
Yeah,
cycles.
And Trump is the same
Doesn't
one
make
complaining
it right.
about it. I mean,
and I think there'll be a legacy to the Bernie Sanders campaign, no matter how it turns out, of people that were young and brought into the political system who stay in the system and make change.
I do want to let me bring that up as a point real quick, because Ray brought me to it, and then we'll go to a break and move on to other topics. But one of the things I thought was interesting in the analysis last night was that Donald Trump, in his very brief remarks that some even refer to as slightly presidential.
Yeah, I know. I saw that.
only in comparison to some of his craziness.
Well, he called him Senator Cruz.
Yeah,
so
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, he didn't say Lion Cruz, right?
He didn't say Lion Ted, right. Yeah. Yeah.
So The question being, people have said, well, for the last several weeks, he's been saying the system is rigged, the system is rigged, the system is rigged. And then he wins 60 to 70% of the vote in New York. And so what does that mean? Can he still go on with that and use that if the system is working well for him?
He'll use whatever he needs to use to get what he wants.
He said it again last night. And so his point was last night, you should get the delegates if you get the votes. That's what he said.
And he said, I don't like Bernie, but the system is bad over there, too, but not as bad as the Republican system.
Correct. You know, he also has gotten rid of some top people in his campaign, replacing them with experts on working at conventions. So I think, Mike, you're right, that he's doing taking a number of steps and different avenues in order to make sure pivoting right exactly to do what he has to do. It will be hard for him to get the full whatever it is 1,237.
Well, he needs 1,237, but if he shows up with like 1,190,
I mean, how powerful is that?
Right. For the, right. Party
that's when you will see not necessarily a third party that is strong, but a complete schism and break apart of the Republican Party.
And, I think the Republicans know that, and it's probably less awful to have him as their standard bearer than it is to have him running a third-party candidacy.
Right.
Dear panel, what do you think about Bernie Sanders' campaign manager, Jeff Weaver, saying they will continue through the summer trying to get superdelegates? In an interview last night, MSNBC asked him twice, even if Clinton has enough delegates and is ahead in the popular vote, would Sanders continue? Weaver said yes. When will the party come together? What will happen?
Well, while he was saying that on another network, his campaign people were saying different things. That
Tad Devine.
Take a step back. Right,
yeah.
Devine. We'll take a step back. So they haven't got their story straight. It looks like from what Bernie said when he landed in Burlington last night after a day of campaigning in Pennsylvania that, we'll take a look at things. We're going to look at it. And he was kind of confirming Devine's assertions.
There'll be a meeting today, and you'll figure out a strategy. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will move on to other topics. There's lots of other stuff and some more letters to read as well. Ray Graff, Rosemary Arameo, and Mike Spain are on the program this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Monticello, licensed real estate broker, 518-227-0718. Proud supporter of Capital Roots Spring Brunch, May 1st at the Empire State Plaza. CapitalRoots.com for tickets. Subsidium Technologies, a single point of contact for area enterprises to identify cloud-related technology. SubsidiumTech.com. And Sunwood Builders Amherst, over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits, working to save energy while maintaining design features. Sunwood-Builders.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Very nice to have you with us and to talk about the issues of the day. We have a ton of letters on the primary yesterday, so I'll get back to those in a second. There's just two other issues I want to talk about real quick, and then we'll move back to election stuff because that seems to be where people are focused and curious.
We're focused there.
Yes, certainly the letters indicate a lot. People have a lot to say, so we'll try to get to as many of those as possible. A federal appeals court, meanwhile, in Richmond, Virginia, has ruled that a transgender high school student who was born as a female can sue his school board on discrimination grounds because it banned him from the boys' bathroom. In backing high school junior Gavin Grimm, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit deferred to the U.S. Education Department's position that transgender students should have access to the bathrooms that match their gender identities rather than being forced to use bathrooms that match their biological sex. The department has said that requiring transgender students to use a bathroom that corresponds with their biological sex amounts to a violation of Title IX, which prohibits sex discrimination in schools that receive federal funding.
This is not only the right thing for that court to have done, bravo, but it was completely unnecessary action. That school had no problem. That child was using the bathroom that he wanted to. I believe that's the way the transgendered work.
He identifies as a male.
He was using it. There was no problem. And then the school board gets in and says, no, we can't have this. There was no problem with parents, none with the other students. Let it be decided at the lowest level. That's not a problem.
The broader issue is exactly as you said it. These are solutions to problems that just don't exist. And it will be interesting to see how the U.S. Department of Education's policies and Title IX of the civil rights component of their policies applies and how the courts answer that. This may be how North Carolina's situation is remedied as far as schools go.
By the Fourth Circuit, right? This ruling would cover North Carolina.
Mike, can you talk a little bit about a story in the paper up at Sage College? It reminds me of this story. We have a student.
Right. Paul Grondahl had a story today in the Times Union about a student at Sage College, Russell Sage College in Troy, which is a student for females. And one of the students identifies as an androgynous person, and was sunbathing without a top. And a police officer, a security guard at the college, came by and asked what the person's gender was. And they explained just exactly that. And there was a ruckus. Troy police came. Eventually, the person covered over their top. But now, Susan Scrimshaw, the president at Sage College, said, I think appropriately, that, you know, our culture is changing rapidly, and we need to be more sensitive, and we need more training for our officers, and we need to learn how to deal with this. Nobody was complaining about this, but it is a public park owned by the city of Troy. College runs. And
right. So you get a cop in there who's like the school board, that's enforcing a rule that doesn't have to be enforced. And now I love the students. They're going to all respond by a topless protest in the park. That's what they're promising.
Well, that could lead to some arrests because it is against the law, you know.
Yes. Yeah. That's civil disobedience.
Let's hope it's a warm day. That.
Yeah. I think we've all seen this thing in Kroger, the Kroger grocery store.
Yes.
So Kroger put up a sign in their grocery stores to say, we have a unisex bathroom because sometimes gender-specific toilets put others in uncomfortable situations. And since we have a lot of our friends coming to see us, we want to provide a place for our friends who are, and then there's a list, dads with daughters, moms with sons, those in the LGBTQ community, parents with disabled children, adults with aging parents, and those who may be mentally or physically disabled. Thank you for helping us to provide a safe environment for everyone. And is that hard? What is so hard about that?
It is called common sense. And as the father of four daughters who has dealt with this all the time, right? Literally every time we go anywhere, that's the way you solve the problem.
You know, and I was struck by the sort of the empathy in the note that. You know, the adults with aging parents is huge.
Yes,
I mean, that's a big issue. I mean, I've been there, you know, and
Maybe they should bring out their birth certificates and they should check.
You know, and it's like, it doesn't have to be hard, does it?
No, it does not.
Exactly.
When
common sense takes over, things can be fixed very easily.
And I understand the rights issue. I mean, I do understand that, but I also think that the places can just very simply deal with some of these situations. Anyway, the other issue I wanted to talk about, if I can bring it up here, is,
you forgot.
Utah.
No, you didn't.
No, Utah has officially deemed porn a public health crisis. It is evil, degrading, addictive, and harmful.
Time magazine just had last week a cover story on this, that it's leading to porn, which is incredibly accessible and free and ubiquitous, is causing a big problem with impotence in male because they just, you watch that stuff enough and that's real life doesn't match.
Yeah, that's just one of the side effects. But it is degrading. I mean, porn encourages young males to look at women as sexual objects and it also promotes the idea that your physical beauty is the most important thing. It isn't healthy, and it shouldn't be encouraged. And what the governor in Utah essentially did was he signed what amounts to a proclamation that says just that. It's a little strongly worded. In a free society where we have the First Amendment, there's a lot of degrees of what people regard as porn or sexy or provocative and all those terms. But when it comes down to the degrading of people who are the subjects of, you know, the people in the porn, I think there's a lot of agreement. And, of course, then you get into the issue of child porn, which is a serious crime and a serious disorder that people have, and it fuels that. So, I mean, it's good to bring it up as a discussion.
It is. It also contributes, as you hinted at, to horrible problems with acquaintance rape that boys tend not to see that what they're doing is rough and unnatural and it's not real sex after you watch enough pornography. So for all these issues, I don't think it's a horrible conservative terrible backward step.
I don't know what the answer is, though, but it's, you talked about the accessibility, and it is, I defy anybody to do a gurgle.
A gurgle search?
That's bad.
Gurgling.
That was very fine example of something that if you looked up, you'd probably.
You know what?
Okay, so my
point. It's like saying 7-Eleven instead of 9-11, like that.
That seemed unfair, though, right?
It did. Yeah, I mean, it's just a misprint.
What happened?
Donald Trump, just making a reference to 9/11, said 7-Eleven, and like networks
caught
just
it right away.
That.
I know it was stupid.
It was just a slip of the tongue, the way we
do
it all the time.
Every day I do it.
Right, as you talk for a living, you just I don't even know what comes out of my mouth at the time.
Oh, did I say Kasich? I meant crook.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just anyway. So
all right. Well, that's another story. But 7-Eleven,
it is another
really?
Story. Okay. Okay. It's funny. I'll give you that.
Stop and shop.
He was thinking of the big gulp.
I mean, that's exactly why 9/11 took off, because we don't say, what is it, we don't say 12/9 for Pearl Harbor. 9/11 became popular in the lexicon because of the similarity to 7/11. So I think it was,
I never even made the connection.
Yes. Well, that's because I was a newspaper editor at the time. We had to decide in the early months after the terrorist attack how you were going to refer to it. SEPT period 9 or 9/11. It was interesting.
I mean, well, I know there were even the discussions of 9/11 and the difference.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, we got off topic quickly.
Sorry.
Okay, but the
Google.
The question is that if you Google pretty much anything and go to the image search, you're going to get something pornographic, and it's very easy to click on that. And can you do anything about that? I don't know.
Yeah, you filter your Google.
Yeah.
Some people say that anything that's close to porn should have a .xec, sex truncation, like .com, .net, .org, .sex, you know. But I don't know. Might help.
Well, but what does the governor propose to do about it?
Public awareness.
Okay, well,
get the discussion going.
So
and
it.
Here we are in Albany, New York, talking about what the governor.
I mean, you have a First Amendment issue, a serious one. So if he does something, then we have a different discussion. But if he's just saying it's bad, then say what you will.
I do want to read. I want to read Brendan's letter real quick, because it is similar to several letters that we've received over the last few minutes. Only problem with unisex bathrooms is that it might seem as a cop-out. Trans persons want to be seen as their identified gender with no barriers or special treatment, and it looks like large parts of the country aren't ready to do that. Unisex bathrooms won't solve that issue. So an important point to make.
But it also won't solve those people who will never, ever accept it. And so having this is a way that everybody is, in fact, the same. You got unisex bathrooms.
The Kroger note was pretty cleverly put together.
Yes. We kind of team put that together, yes. We're out of time. My thanks to Alan, who was with us earlier. Also, thanks to Ray and Rosemary and Mike. We'll be back with more Roundtable after this break.